And welcome to Inside Albania with me, Alice Taylor. This week, the main topic is going to be media freedom. Now, we're also going to be talking about the recently approved Disinformation Committee, which is going to be set up in Parliament. We're also going to be taking a look at a new report looking at geopolitical threats, issues and challenges in Kosovo, Serbia and the wider Western Balkan region. On Wednesday, international media freedom advocacy group Reporters Without Borders came to Albania to hold a one-day conference. This was in partnership with the Albanian Media Council. Now, the idea was to sit with local media stakeholders, journalists, pedagogues, everyone in between, and to discuss the challenges faced by the sector. Then they have come together to create proposals which will be made public, and you know, if the government wants to consider them, etc., they are welcome to do so. Now, I'm joined today by Pavel Sazlai, the head of Europe and the Western Balkans at Reporters Without Borders. Pavel, welcome to Inside Albania. Welcome to my studio. It's a pleasure to have you here in person and to be able to talk about media freedom in Albania. The issues, any glimmers of hope there might be, and the conference yesterday. So, first of all, welcome.
Thank you for the invitation.
How are you enjoying Albania so far?
Albania is a beautiful country. It's a very important country in the Balkans. And I think that journalists and citizens deserve better than what they actually have to go through right now.
Mm. And, well, this goes into my first question. Albania ranks worst in the region, last in the region, and second last in Europe in the Western Balkans in last year's World Press Freedom Index. That makes me feel quite depressed, to be honest, that we're ranking last out of, I think, second to last out of 40 countries and last out of the Balkan region. Why is it so bad here? Is it that other countries are doing a lot better and are progressing quickly and we're being left behind, or are we really that bad?
Look, in the Western Balkans, there are two groups of countries. Albania is in the worst group with Serbia and Bosnia. The situation here is really, really difficult for journalists, for press freedom, and for the right to information of the citizens, their right to quality information. And there are really systemic causes to these problems. And unfortunately, I have to observe that since I came here last time in November 2022, there has been no significant change. There has been a stagnation. And yesterday at the conference that RSF organized with the Media Council of Albania, I think there was a general agreement on the problems. These vary from safety of journalists. Physical attacks, smear campaigns, gag lawsuits, to insufficient implementation of the legislation on access to information and protection of confidentiality of sources, lack of sustainable revenue models of media associations, distorted independence, copyright enforcement, and advertising market. And of course, you know, the elephant in the room, it was not the elephant in our room yesterday, but often it is the case here in Albania, is the concentration of major media in the hands of owners, using them as tools of political and economic influence, coupled with low standards of transparency of ownership and funding. You know, and we can go on like this, talk about the lack of independence of the media regulator, of the public media, and we can finish with breaches of journalistic ethics and of the general trust in media.
So it's not just, we can't just say it's the government's fault, it's the media owner's fault, it's the journalist's fault. This is a problem which is due to multiple parts of society. You know, it's the public, they don't trust the media. We've got media owners with their fingers in lots of different pies who use the media for their vested interests. We have bad working conditions for journalists. Maybe they don't have contracts, the rules aren't enforced. They can't just go to court and settle it there for various different reasons. Amongst journalists as well, you know, they're copying and pasting the amount of times my work has been copied, pasted, shared, you know, and then they don't take it down, or not checking sources, not checking facts, reporting on crimes involving minors, for example, and publishing a picture of them and being unethical, right up to the issues which come from the state, from the government, lack of information, not getting answers from institutions, problems with politicians from every angle who quite enjoy intimidating the media sometimes. This is a very broad issue. It's not like in other countries in Europe, you know, where it's maybe just problems with the law or problems with ownership. This is something, from what I understand, which touches every aspect of our society in a way.
Yes, correct. And we have to say that the problems we see in Albania exist in different levels and proportions in other European countries. You know, the attempt to politically control the flow of information, the collusion between media, business, politics, disinformation, fake news on social networks, and of course the undermining of the sustainability, economic sustainability of media by the digital platforms like Meta, and even now with by the artificial intelligence. But I mean, what I really want to stress here that is that yes, although the even the World Press Freedom Index is not a ranking of governments, it's a ranking of countries.
Yes.
Governments do have a big responsibility, and many of the problems here in Albania can be traced to the political environment. There are systemic problems, but governments have special responsibility. And we think, and maybe I would hit start here on a more positive note, that there is a opportunity for change, which is the accelerated EU integration process, and of course it depends on the government to change its attitude.
I mean, I would argue as well that this issue with politicians in Albania, it's not just from this government. I mean, if you look what was happening before with previous governments, and I mean, I've been pressured by politicians from both sides of the political, actually probably more by the opposition. I was taking photos in a protest in December 2022, and I was threatened, and two protesters tried to climb over a barrier to, I assume, attack me. And when I wrote about it on social media, I received harassment saying that I should take this information down because it makes them look bad, etc. It happens from all angles. It's a culture of not respecting the work of journalists, which I think extends into multiple areas and doesn't have a political colour. But you mentioned positivity then. What is getting better? I mean, the government have... There have been some signals. They are open to discussion or consultation. You had this forum, this conference in Tirana yesterday where members of the media community came. There were experts, there were people from the EU, from the Council of Europe. What was the aim of the conference and what came out of it? I've attended lots of conferences, you know, where everyone talks about how bad everything is and then everyone goes home. What came out of this conference?
RSF is interested in improving the situation based on a transparent and trustful approach. This conference, organized by RSF and Albania Media Council, and gathering really the key journalists in the country, aim to identify, agree on the diagnostics, on the problems. I think we more or less reached an agreement on that, and now the next step is together with the Media Council, with the Albanian journalists, draft recommendations directed to national and European authorities, you know, the context being the EU enlargement. And we will do this in a very transparent way. We will publish these recommendations, and we'll see what happens. I think you know, it's really important to come with specific proposals.
Yes.
What needs to be changed, and this change and this environment, somehow this transformation is going to happen also as a result of Albania's accession to the EU. We have a new European legislation, European Media Freedom Act, which is the best, actually, the best international law, the best international standard on media freedom, and Albania will have to adhere to that, and will have to also somehow accept it into its own system. And we have also other European measures that are in force today, so that is going to happen. And here we really need to defend the interests of and rights of journalists in Albania, independent journalists, and of the citizens, of their right to information, and do this in a way to build trust. Because yes, there is a lack of trust today between journalists themselves, between the authorities and journalists, and between the media and the public.
I am worried about possible pushback on some of the proposals and points, not pushback, but how you're going to be able to tackle them. Funding, for example. We know that there is a concentration of media ownership in the country. These are big businesses. They have interests in regulated sectors. Their interest is not to change that. It works quite well for them, to the detriment of journalists. Problems with working conditions. Previous attempts to set up journalist unions have been very difficult. There is one now that has been set up. Let's see how it will roll out, whether it will be effective. But I do see there are issues here where the media actors within the media ecosystem won't want to change, because how it is now benefits them. How do you think to overcome this?
The European legislation, this new European Media Freedom Act, already offers us some instruments. And it's a binding legislation that also Albania will have to adhere to if it wants to enter the EU. This is about, there are provisions there about transparency of ownership and funding. There is also a provision about the independence of editorial offices of private media, not only public media, but also private media. I think really the key issue here is that if Albania wants to enter the EU, and a vast majority of Albanians do want that, there must be, I think there will be local pressure to change the situation. How exactly these laws will look like, I think that's really a question for the local journalist. Yeah. But yes, I mean, these problems do exist also in France, but not in this proportion. But we will do our best also to look into international best practices, how these problems have been addressed successfully in some countries, and it has been the case.
It's complex when it comes to how media can fund themselves. I know from my experience with the previous portal, you know, that we ended up with no money and had to close. It's subscription models, for example. Albania is a mainly cash-based economy. People don't really use cards. It's increasing more, but they don't really use them so much. It's a very poor country, people. We have hundreds of online portals, channels, social media. People don't want to spend 2, 5, 10 euros a month for content, you know? And then if you ask for donations, this is not reliable. It doesn't allow media to plan forward. Then if you rely on funding from NGOs and embassies, I think there are problems with independence there. It's not sustainable long term. It's also a high administrative burden. So we need to figure out, in an Albanian context, you know, if the money is not coming from a big business, another regulated sector, or in the case of some media, political parties or the black market, how are we going to ensure that we are sustainable in the long term? This is going to be the big challenge.
You know, I come from also a post-communist country, Slovakia, which currently has government hostile to journalists. There are these very strong independent media with very successful subscription models. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a country that historically has been poorer than the Western European countries. And these subscription models, they did develop. I believe it's possible in Albania. And of course, there is an interest not to develop it and depend on politically distributed advertisement in total opacity and for favors in terms of independence. But I believe it's possible. If it's possible in Slovakia, if it's possible on this small market, there are also other countries. So, but we really do need also a government in Albania that is friendly with journalists and that shows real willingness to, to support press freedom. For the moment, we don't really see it. This is what I hear a lot here in Albania from various actors. So we, of course, we will be very vigilant about any proposal that the government makes. And I'm concerned about this commission on this information that is being created in the parliament by the ruling majority. So we are very vigilant and we will try to work with the with the local journalists to improve their conditions of work.
And in fact, so this commission, I was going to talk about it after, but I'll talk about it now since you're here. So the Interior Minister announced last week on Facebook that this committee would be created. It's been voted on now. It will be, it's going to happen. The Speaker of Parliament has contacted the US State Department to ask for their assistance, oversight, expertise in it, and actually the opposition, or the leader of the opposition parliamentary group, I get a bit confused because the opposition's so split up at the moment, I'm not really sure who's in charge of what, Ghazman Bardhi has said that any reference to media must be removed from the scope of the commission, and that it's necessary to handle the matter sensitively and with great care. So I think people's antennas are sort of twitching slightly at this. Obviously, after we had the anti-Spiefia, the law that they tried to do a few years ago, I think the possible inclusion of media in this commission, people were sort of immediately on edge. But I think people are going to be switched on to this. And, you know, if it is involving the US State Department and the EU, potentially, you know, we could benefit from that oversight, but we don't really know much about it for now, so we have to just be vigilant and
yes, I mean, look, watch. it's totally legitimate to fight against this information, this malign interference from dictatorships like Russia. I mean, this is a big problem in the EU, but I'm not sure it's a burning problem in Albania. So, and we have this context here, and as you mentioned, the anti-defamation package, it was a very bad experience, and RSF has also fought against it, and finally, during my last visit, it was withdrawn, eventually. So, you know, if any steps are taken, there has to be, like, a debate, inclusive debate, and these actors that you mentioned, especially the EU, have to be involved to really put things straight.
I think, you know, yes, I agree. I don't think external influence and misinformation is a big burning issue. It's not at the moment, and especially when you compare it to the other countries in the Western Balkans, but we do have issues with it internally as well, which I think is an issue. But then, you know, that line between media, what's published on social media, who's funding NGOs, etc., this line has to be drawn very carefully. We need to approach it with great care. I guess also it could be forward-looking commission. It could be a forward-looking step, like, okay, we're not really struggling with external influence too much right now, but let's put this in place before that happens. But I reserve my judgment until I've seen exactly what the scope is going to be, what the accompanying laws will be, if any, you know, what penalties there'll be. Because, you know, we've had attempts at similar things in Hungary, not good there. In Poland, in France, they've passed a law very recently on foreign interference, which, I mean, I consider France quite a democratic country in many ways. I don't foresee many issues with it. But the EU directive on this matter has been quite controversial. So
I wouldn't compare France and Albania. However, you mentioned Hungary and also currently in Bosnia
and
in
Slovakia.
Republika Srpska, there is a proposal on foreign agents label that potentially can mean administrative harassment and intimidation of journalists, like in Hungary, and based on the Russian model. Yes, I mean, you know, one thing I want to say about this is the best way to fight disinformation is to support those who spread trustworthy information.
Yes.
So to support the media and the journalists who are really independent and respect journalistic ethics.
Quickly, my last question. When can we expect the next World Press Freedom Index?
The next World Press Freedom Index will be published on the 3rd of May, mm-hmm. the International Day of Press Freedom. That's as much as I can say now.
I've been trying to get something out of you, but...
The problems that we see in Albania are global in different proportions. Mm-hmm. Political attempts on press freedom, disinformation in the online space, especially propaganda, and of course lack of trustworthiness, lack of trust in general in the media. RSF, is fighting for the public interest of right of citizens to information, mm-hmm. and for that we really need a strong independent media.
Pavel, we could talk all day about this, but my producer will kill me. So thank you so much for your time and for your insights.
Thank you, Alice.
Thanks. Moving on now, as tensions between Kosovo and Serbia continue to simmer, the tentacles of Russian influence infiltrate and disrupt Serbia, Montenegro, North Macedonia, and issues of stability and even succession persist in Bosnia and Herzegovina, the region's geopolitics is again under the spotlight. The New Lines Institute has published a report called Western Balkans 2024, an assessment of current security posture and current geopolitical challenges. Now, the idea of this new report is to shed light on the reality of what's happening in the ground, in the hopes it will aid policymakers in their decisions and stances. I'm joined today by one of those involved in the report, Dr. Azim Ibrahim from the New Lines Institute for Strategy and Policy. Dr. Ibrahim, welcome to Inside Albania. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I want to talk, obviously, about the report, which has just been released. Obviously, our viewers will not have been able to read it in its entirety. Could you give us a brief overview of its scope and the main findings, please?
Sure. Well, the report is from the New Lines Institute. We're just launching a new project called the Western Balkans Observatory. And one of the reasons we're launching that is that it's now become very apparent that policymakers in the West, both in the United States and in Europe, have taken their eye off the Balkans, the Western Balkans in particular. And, there is a lot of malign activity going on there. And if you've seen the recent press, the likes of very senior policymakers are now advising that this is going to be potentially a new front for outside actors to have interference in the region. And so what we are trying to do as a Washington, D.C.-based think tank is trying to get the best information, the best analysis of what's happening in the region to policymakers in Washington and Brussels, so that they can make better informed choices. So the most recent report is the second collection of essays that we have. We have over half a dozen of top experts from multiple countries providing in-depth, deep dive analysis of what's actually going on, and with key policy recommendations, which we hope that policymakers in the West will take into consideration.
Now, you say policymakers in the EU and the US have taken their eye off the Western Balkans. I mean, I follow what's happening here on a daily basis, particularly Kosovo and Serbia, and I would say that they haven't taken their eye off what's happening there, but rather they're not seeing the full picture. I think, in particular, the approach towards Kosovo and what can be considered quite a lenient approach towards Serbia is very problematic. I understand that the report mentions the sort of aftermath of the Banske attack in northern Kosovo in September. What does this report bring to the table in terms of what is happening in northern Kosovo, relations between Kosovo and Serbia, and this attack?
Yeah, well, what this report brings is that the United States essentially has to get much more involved. European management of this entire region, which the US essentially left to Europe to try to take care of their own neighborhood, has not been forthcoming. And Europe essentially has demonstrated nothing but weakness in the region in the face of Russian interference in particular, but also other actors as well, including the Chinese and through their proxy organizations, whether they be in Serbia, Greater Serbia, or Republika Srpska. And so the key kind of recommendation that we make is that the United States really needs to get much more involved, particularly as we see the efforts in Ukraine, you know, irrespective of who becomes president next year in the United States, it's quite likely that Ukraine will start winding down. And it's also thus quite likely that the likes of Putin will start looking for other regions in their backyard to cause more kind of chaos. Mm-hmm. And so the US needs to really up its efforts and get much more involved in this region and not leave it to the Europeans, which has been, and you can't express it in any other way, but a dismal failure.
But, I mean, in terms of the geopolitical relations with Russia and China, what is the state of these at the moment? I mean, in the context of Serbia, Kosovo, Montenegro, Bosnia and Herzegovina in the region, how are the relations? What is the influence of China? Is it different to the influence of Russia, for example? Can you give us a bit more background on this?
Yeah, so the way these two countries operate are very different. Russia, I think the best way you could describe it, is essentially a troublemaker that wants to cause chaos in the region, but that will take up resources from Europe and from NATO. And those resources can then be diverted from other parts of Europe, the likes of Ukraine and others. And so their principal objective seems to be to cause chaos, to cause disinformation, and to essentially cause confusion amongst the populace. China, on the other hand, is much more interested in what you would describe as economic colonization. Mm-hmm. Is essentially trying to get countries to take these very large loans, development loans, infrastructure loans. You see this very aptly in Montenegro, for example, where they built the very famous Bridge to Nowhere. And this is a very different strategy that China is utilizing. Mm-hmm. And what China is actually interested in is political stability. They want to have a stable politics so that they can continue with their economic expansion. And so they don't really have much consideration of whomsoever is in power, whether it's an authoritarian government or whether it's a democratic government. They are much more interested in stability, which is the opposite goal of what Putin is actually after. But at the same time, China's ambition is to create client states in which become part of the Chinese sphere of influence, and that will always support Beijing, simply because these countries are so indebted to Beijing that they have no independent foreign policy. They will always be supporting China when it comes to the likes of Taiwan, or when it comes to any other, an interest that China may be interested in.
We mentioned Russia and China. Are there any other malign influences in the region or sort of ones to be concerned about? Azerbaijan, for example, with gas pipelines. Turkey seems to be quite big on infrastructure. They've done an awful lot in Albania when it comes to reconstruction after the earthquake. Yet in their own country, they haven't really done so much. So I'm wondering, does your report touch on other possible influences in the region?
Yeah, the report touches on the entire security architecture. You know, there's more than one actor, and there's more than two actors outside just Russia and China. But I'm not sure how malign and how influential many of these actors actually are in terms of changing the political dynamics within these countries itself. You know, China and Russia are very big players, very powerful, very wealthy. And as you rightly said, you know, China has a very different modus operandi. And it was very interesting that there was a report done by the Kiel Institute of Global Economics in Germany, which examined 100 of the publicly available Belt and Road Initiative contracts. And in each of these contracts, they found that there is a specific clause that says that a country cannot change its foreign policy towards China, otherwise those loans can be recalled.
In terms of countries in the region, which do you consider at the most at risk from Chinese and Russian influence? I mean, I have in my mind an idea, but from your perspective as an expert.
Yeah. So it seems to me that the ones that are in the front line for Chinese influence are essentially all of them. You know, China is trying to have inroads to every one of these countries. But for the Russians, it seems that the priority seems to be Kosovo. and Bosnia Herzegovina, and through their proxies in Serbia, they are making through the proxies in Serbia, they are causing chaos in Kosovo between the populace, between the north and the south, and at the same time, through their proxies in Republika Srpska, they are pushing for independence and much more kind of closer, alignment with the greater Serbia through their through Republika Srpska.
And in your view, and I've asked this to almost every guest who I have on the show talking about these issues, why are the EU and the US not doing more to rein in Russian influence, but also to rein in Serbia, which is being used? There are proxies active there. It's being used as a base to sow discord. Why are they not doing more? Is this a lack of understanding, of knowledge, of information, which your report seeks to sort of plug that gap? Or is there something else going on? Is there lobbying going on in Washington we don't know about? What's your view?
I think it's a combination of all of those things. In fact, there is extensive lobbying going on in Washington by the Serbians in particular. Mm-hmm. And there's also quite a few very senior officials, senior retired officials, who are actually working as lobbyists for the Serbian government. And they have considerable access, and they have extensive experience in the region, so they're seen as wise voices that they bring to Washington on the region. And their entire modus operandi is that we need a strong Serbia for the region, for stability in the region. We cannot put Serbia in a little box. We cannot push back on it. At the same time, there is extensive lobbying going on in Brussels, in the European Union, by the Croats. And I think it's quite well known that the Croats in particular have a considerable amount of influence in the European Union.
When you say the Croats have been lobbying in Brussels, is this to the detriment of Kosovo? Is this pro-Serbia? Or is this in general wider? In what context are you saying here?
Yeah, they are essentially lobbying to further their own particular interests and undermine the interest of other countries, which they see, particularly Bosnia, Herzegovina, mm-hmm. and to try to stifle the NATO path to NATO membership for the likes of Bosnia and, possibly Kosovo in the future, and trying to ensure that Kosovo is not recognised by many elements in Europe as an independent country. So these are the kind of focus of the kind of areas that they are focusing on. But it's essentially what they are doing is just creating confusion. And, they are not trying to necessarily mislead European policymakers. They are simply trying to confuse them. And so Europe is unable to try to come to a single consensus between the various countries. And as you know, Europe is, works by consensus. So if there is no consensus between the countries and they're being pulled in different directions, it means that nothing happens. There's all sorts of misinformation and confusion campaigns going on. And they're very and it's quite clever in the mechanism which has been set up, is that for each country, they have a different target and different way. Mm-hmm. And so when each of these countries get around a table in Brussels, they have a very different understanding of the reality, and they don't necessarily, the Balkans has just not been a priority for Europe. So they don't necessarily have best information at hand from their own governments, from their own intelligence agencies, from their own foreign ministry to see what the actual reality on the ground is. They're essentially relying on the most effective lobbyists to feed them that information. And that is a picture of confusion.
And then you have Serbia, which is an EU candidate country, moving through the accession process, albeit very slowly. Mm-hmm. And then the EU is thinking, oh, they're quite close to Russia. We want to keep them close. We don't want to push them further away. So against that backdrop, which you've just described, the sort of chaos, misinformation, misunderstanding, everyone with diverging views, opinions and agendas. And then the EU going, oh, we kind of want to keep our friends close, that is probably how we've ended up in this mess at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where, the US and Europe, most unfortunately, are willing to compromise their own values. And their own values is essentially the only power that they have, the soft power that they have. It's their values-based international rules-based order. But they're willing to compromise that, trying to keep Serbia within its sphere of influence, and trying to keep it outside, you know, the influence of Putin. And that simply is completely ineffective, because the likes of Serbia are able to thus play both sides quite effectively.
My last question.
Yeah.
Albania doesn't feature so much from what I saw. Would you consider Albania is one of the more freer countries in the region? It's also interesting, the government here has announced it's creating a commission on disinformation and foreign influence. But yet, I don't see a huge amount of foreign influence here. You know, we're pretty immune to influence from Russia. This is maybe a historical and a language thing as well. But is Albania one of the more secure countries in the region, in your view?
Yeah, so we're at the very early stages of our project. So our next, actually, anthology of reports is going to be focusing on Albania. And you might be right that there's not a significant amount of disinformation going on in Albania. But this is something that we will have to look into on a much more extensive and deeper basis, because the nature of misinformation is that you do not know it's misinformation. It's just classified as factual, the factual reality. So we have to look into this and actually do a much deeper examination of the extent of kind of misinformation. One thing we'd like to really see, and one thing that we're trying to promote with our think tank, is much more regional cooperation between the countries. And this is something that we're actually planning in the very near future, to have a summit in the region with representatives, you know, scholars and academics from all the different countries, you know, and trying to share best practice, trying to share what their experiences are. And this seems to be really lacking. And it's most unfortunate this hasn't been done already.
Well, I want to congratulate you all for your work. And I hope this lands on the right desks, because here, seeing, you know, the disparity between what's going on in the region and what these people in Washington and Brussels come out and say, it's quite disheartening, and it's quite concerning. And we've seen the consequences of this already in last September. So thank you for your work, and I hope it makes a difference.
Thank you so much, Alice. Much appreciated.
That's all for this week. Due to ongoing Formula One, there are still a few disruptions to our schedule, but you can find out exactly what time we'll be on every Saturday if you follow me on Instagram and Twitter, Alice in Albania. You can catch us on Euronews Albania on our YouTube channel and across all major podcasting platforms. Until next week, mirë pafshim.